Good afternoon. Thank you for making this your last or one of your last presentations of today. I'm sure it was a long day. My name again is LaConte Dill, and this is Regina Jackson, and we'll be talking about community-based organizations as healthy learning environments. So a lot of the conversations today are going to be about schools and the intersection between schools and public health, and I think CBOs should be considered healthy learning environments and are a part of that that conversation with schools. I have no personal financial relationships to disclose, but we will be talking about a poetry project that emerged from this research, and we have books of that poetry anthology available, and those proceeds go directly to the East Oakland Youth Development Center. At risk. If all you think of me is ill-fated, shooting baskets, rolling caskets, dropping school books, then who waits for me, breath bated, hold hope with its limbs out, daydream swapping? Drive me to the page's edge, there's no footprints. There's no mail delivered, there's no address. I run up and down the block, get shin splits, looking for a place to rest, break, recess. Tattoo my name on the corner of my wrist, stake claim, mark territory as my own. On my forearm, the ones who've gone, I list. Tennis shoes on power lines, tossed and thrown. I am the gum underneath your shoe sole. Forgotten, but still stuck. No peace, no hope. So that's a poem entitled At Risk. And I wrote that poem about a year ago in the course of my dissertation research. We can talk about it a little bit later while I'm writing poetry in the middle of running a dissertation. But that poem really takes on the voice of a young person growing up in the inner city. And that's in East Oakland was the context of my research, but I really think that East Oakland can be Southwest D.C., can be the South Bronx, can be South Central, can be South Philly, and so on and so on and so forth. And one of my mentors and one of my committee members, Nikki Jones, who's a sociologist at UC Santa Barbara, calls this process of stigmatizing the urban or the other as discursive redlining. So just with regular redlining, when we kind of stigmatize place, discursive redlining is using that language. So at risk, ghetto, hood, dangerous, disadvantaged. Oakland is also called Bumptown, not just for the speed bumps there, but also for the crack cocaine epidemic and heroin. So that kind of process of stigmatizing people, stigmatizing place, also begins to stigmatize people. So you see young people called thugs, or even the super predator phenomenon. So that poem kind of evokes that spirit. In the midst of that, we do have safe havens. So the East Oakland Youth Development Center is in the hood, quote unquote, of East Oakland. And it's in the middle of the Killer Corridor. And that Killer Corridor has been named the Killer Corridor by some of the people that live there and work there, but also by the media, the Oakland Tribune, because it is a violent place. So how do people live and work and go to school on a daily basis in the context of the Killer Corridor? And how do safe havens emerge in the midst of that?
Some 33 years ago, the Clorox Company, having seen what was going on in East Oakland, severe unemployment, high dropout rates, had the vision to create a place where young people could grow and thrive. So the programs that were developed in direct proportion with the challenges that were existing. High unemployment created job training and placement programs. High dropout rate created GED programs. And, you know, those programs became more and more empowering and important as the times went on. The educational empowerment component also birthed a after-school homework and tutorial center so that young people could have the structure and the discipline to take care of the homework and be, in fact, responsible for their work. The GED program redirected young people. We're developing the social capacities of young people toward leadership and toward positive and responsible citizenry. So physical development, which might be the footprint of how people come into the building, and then you suck them into the more comprehensive programming, and or artistic expression, teaching young people that they can succeed at a very young level. You know, these days, kids are getting kicked out and suspended from kindergarten. They don't have a lot of opportunities to be successful, so it creates that foundational component of expecting success from themselves and, in fact, being able to step into it and understand what it feels and looks like so that they want more of it.
So community engaged research has been defined by the Community Campus Partnership as scholarship that involves a researcher in a mutually beneficial partnership with the community. So in my role as being a doctoral student candidate at the time at UC Berkeley, partnered with the East Oakland Youth Development Center for this research. And in this vein, we're only talking about a small slice of this work. You can definitely contact us further to talk about the bigger project. But this partnership, we kind of went through Tuckman stages of group development, so forming, norming, storming, performing, whereas our different cultures had to come together. It was an easier partnership than some people describe in CBPR, Community Engaged Scholarship, in that Regina was more than happy to have a researcher come in. Some community organizations don't want to, especially Berkeley or other universities, don't always have a great reputation in the community. Regina, though, saw the value of research and didn't see research as a bad word. Our norming, our courting stage was a lot quicker than usual. But we definitely had different cultures getting up to speed on health lingo and research terms. Regina was ready for me to start interviews the second day I was there. IRB exists, and that could not happen. So 6 to 8 months later, you know, there was more a longer courting before the university kind of culture came into play. Likewise, we work with young people. I was working with young people definitely after school, but not too late, not just because they have to go to school in the morning, but because it is in the Killer Corridor and folks have to get home at a certain time. So just learning the different cultures there. And what we're in the middle of now is adjourning, which is not always talked about in Tuckman's model of, I'm not in Oakland anymore, I'm not in the Bay Area, I'm in Atlanta, so what does this relationship look like when the researcher leaves? Not helicopter research per se, I didn't kind of come in and swoop out, but how does the relationship and the work evolve when kind of the partners are not exactly in place? So how does EOYDC emerge as a healthy learning environment?
One of the things that's very important for young people is not only to learn how to live day to day, but how to envision their future. And so what we brought to bear or to deal with was this sense of being responsible as a group of people moving together towards success and what success is defined by. So we talked a lot about character development. Our theory of change was actually rooted in character development, readiness, and access. And so the opportunity for young people to do community cleanups, to march for peace, to have 8-year-olds looking at virtual college tours, because this is an expectation of the high school tutors or the college students that are roaming those halls. Are young people able to see themselves 5 years from now, 10 years from now? Because teaching the alumni the importance of staying connected and continuing to have that youth-led mentoring model that they espouse, enjoy, and that continues to give them residual impact is phenomenal. So the healthy learning environment, again, is focused on your responsibility not only to better yourself and take advantage of the opportunities available to you by connections to caring adults, but also to recognize that as a 9-year-old, you may be called on to do the VIP tour through your center. What would you say? What happens when you go on a field trip and it's not to Magic Mountain or to Marine World, but it's to hear a civil rights lecture or to interview Condoleezza Rice? Are you in fact prepared? What is your responsibility, not just to be a qualified, informed person, but to identify that your trajectory must go up, not out, and certainly not down? But for those GED students who are often re-entering the second phase of their life, you know, the trajectory for young people these days, one mistake can change your entire life. So bringing those young people back, giving them positive choice kind of curriculum, and expecting that their journey will also embrace more education and more responsible citizenry as a realistic expectation was very important for us. So one of the most important programs that involves most all of the young people, the 2,000 that come through our center, is the youth leadership training. We have an entirely youth-led program during the summer where young people go through significant job training and then draft, develop, write curriculum, and teach classes. They have a system where they're managed and, you know, they can get fired from those jobs, all those kinds of things, but they are given the responsibilities and the roles. And so what we look at in terms of the academic theory is that this is a zone of proximal development where the adult sets the stage, shows them or demonstrates for them the example, and then the young person is given the training to kind of walk in those shoes and then walks that path by themselves. An exceptional example, you're going to frame that, sorry.
So a lot of the work that Regina and staff at UOYDC do, I call the hookup. In colloquial terms, also in more research terms, it could be considered network-based social capital. So not social capital in just relationships, but really that social leverage that important relationships provide. So the youth are afforded meaningful opportunities through the different activities. They also get social support and mentorship from the adult staff that leverage to educational and employment opportunities. And then that future orientation of considering the future. What are their educational outcomes and opportunities? What are their employment opportunities? Who can they be as an adult? So not just a healthy young adult, but a healthy adult. And to talk about how the hookup has worked for her, we have an alum of EOYDC who lives here in D.C. and works at NIH, Ronell Lucas.
Thank you. So imagine, if you will, a young woman living very close to the Killer Quarter, very much introverted, so much so, actually, that days would go by without her saying a word either to teachers or to her parents unless absolutely forced to do so. She is, and very much in that personality, is then thrust into the position of an assistant program director or program director at the EOYDC. So in that time, in that 2 months long, and it would be a 2 month wow, I call it a wow experience, in that 2 month long experience, she would learn how to manage people, not just peers, but people twice her age. She would learn how to hire and, if necessary, terminate employees. She would have to, on a weekly basis, give presentations to Miss Regina Jackson and be prepared to, be very much so prepared to answer any questions that may come up. And also just to be able to accept and to give and also to accept criticism. So as the program director, she's not only assisting in developing and helping to develop and implement these programs for the other attendees, but she's also learning to do that for herself. She's actually getting the leadership, I would say, squeezed out of her. She's forced to do this. So now here I am. It's been 16 years since my first experience at the EOYDC, and I can truly say that it was not my experience as an undergraduate at Howard University or as a graduate student at Trinity University that helped me or where I first learned or first acquired these skills. It truly was at the East Oakland Youth Development Center, and so I can say that that is why I'm truly an advocate of the EOYDC, the programs, and that's also why that I continue to be involved with the EOYDC 16 years later and from all these miles away. Every time that I fly back to Oakland, California, I make it a point to visit the EOYDC. I make it a point to go and speak to the students there because of the experience that I've had. I also continue to lean on the leaders, such as Ms. Jackson, for guidance in my own professional life. She is a mentor of mine. And I also can say that I think that my success up to this point as a project manager at in the HIV vaccine research program at NIH is very much a reflection of that downstream pipeline, the pipeline that I can say truly began at EOIDC. Thank you.
So just briefly, we're going to talk about a small chunk of the research I was involved with in being in this context, in this flourishing context in the middle of a distressed neighborhood. The young people that I was working with, I did kind of traditional qualitative interviewing with them. But afterwards, I didn't want to leave and kind of go into my back cave and write my dissertation. I wanted to engage them in what I called their data. It was their words. And young people were kind of looking at quantitative data based on youth in East Oakland, and most of that data in their term was pejorative. So if you look at, regular data on young people in urban environments, you see the unemployment, you see the high homicide rates, even suicide rates, you see school dropout. And the young people at EOIDC, even though they do have very chaotic and stressful lives and deal with violence and death on a daily basis, they also are all working and are all in school, whether it be GED, full private school, public school, college. They're on an educational and a career trajectory. And so the youth and I engaged in a process of a narrative analysis to tease out that data that text and that other methods don't always capture. And this is not something new. I mean, if we look back at the Freedom Schools or the Revolutionary Black Workers, our folks use words. They call it poetry, they call it songs, they call it scriptures, and so we did some of that. And this is not even new in public health. I mean, public health folks are also using photo and video and poetry, as well as educators and social workers. And we formed basically a research collective to tease out this qualitative rich data with the young people. And that really evolved from poems to a six series, basically poetry collective, where it emerged into an actual book. So this is published, it has an ISBN number, a Library of Congress number, available for purchase, and those actually a fundraising tool for EOIDC, but this is the youth data. I know as a public health researcher, I'll be at APHA, I'll be publishing hopefully soon, but the young people also have something that they can call their own and they can use this and go on the road. So the young people really emerge from respondents to co-researchers, to published authors. And this process really has been evolving, and the vision is much greater than what we initially set out to do. And there's a lot of researchers that talk about this kind of, like Sean Gendright, an educator at San Francisco State, talks about radical healing. And so how young people who are oppressed and distressed are able to find the hope within and cultivate this in various ways. We're just going to kind of end with some of the organizational and youth impacts of this work.
That's true, but I just changed my mind and decided to read a poem. And I'm coming to it, I promise. Okay. I live on a block between two corners. I hear gas team, other side, P team, lady gas, circle boys. I hear them fighting. I hear them funking with other cliques. I hear about who beat up who or who shot who. I have a couple of friends who are involved. I am a friend because somewhere in this mess we found common grounds, but this is only one corner. I peek at the other corner. I hear my father telling me that I can be anything that I want to be. I hear him telling me to get my grades up so I can get out of here. I hear my 3.3 GPA. I hear hard work, and I hear success. So when we look at what the impacts are coming from this organization, we have created campaigns that transport young people from the Oakland Unified Schools to EOIDC. They're called After School Leadership Academies because the streets are in fact so dangerous. We have 17-year-olds who are being admitted to college as juniors. because of the partnership programs that we have promoted between the junior college campuses. We have young people who are moving from Oakland to D.C. to be congressional pages, a program that just recently got cut, serving as White House fellows on Wall Street and in NASA internships. We have young people who are the first in their family to graduate from high school, graduate from institutions like UC Berkeley, and take on international exchange programs, most of whom, when they come to the center and maybe take their first college tour, have never flown on a plane before. Last year, Rennell took the students on a tour of Howard University and talked to them about the things she liked, the things that she didn't like. But they had an opportunity not just to look at college campuses, but to look at prospective careers, meeting with the Secretary of State, meeting with ambassadors, going to visit, you know, different, the Smithsonian of African Art, to begin to see their own path to greatness and how it begins with someone that looked like Rennell, or they look like Rennell, and look at where she is now. For our GED students, 75% of them are going on to 2- and 4-year institutions. They are now living the lives that they never dreamed might be possible. Our young people are participating in advisory councils with foundations. They're becoming a part of statewide initiatives around college-bound brotherhoods, and we, in fact, have created a brotherhood across the country where our young people are expected to be the big brother, the big sister, be that community for our students who are away from home, even if away from home is their nearby 4-year institution. But because our young people know that they can fly further and faster based upon the empowerment tools that they've received at EOYDC, they do now venture. We have a student in the MBA program at Harvard this year. They're going to the HBCUs in great, great numbers, but as well, graduate students. They're going into social services at a higher rate. They are achieving further and further than their parents, than themselves, ever thought possible. And what's most important is that they are coming back. They are coming back to share with the 5-year-olds and the 10-year-olds and the 15-year-olds. The Brian Shaws and the Gary Paytons who once came through the doors and went on into the MBA are coming back not just to talk about the success in basketball, but the importance of education and the character development that began at EOYDC. The employers that come to us for job fairs know that the young people that are prepared for workforce development are going to compete that much better because of the programming that they came through. I think I'm over my 1-minute time for that time.
So just to wrap up, we kind of talked about a lot of different points, but these are just kind of in summation, like looking at long-term implications, but also to kind of spark the discussion that can happen after all of the presentations. Joe really talked about safe passages, so we can begin to think about community-based organizations as well as schools and what are the safe passages that exist in communities, that communities that are often seen distressed. Where are those safe havens and how do youth get through them safely? How can youth kind of conceive of service-oriented careers? There are CBOs in communities. How are the youth transformed on a professional level to kind of consider themselves as professionals, as social justice advocates, and not just as participants in them? Also, how can we use poetry, but not just poetry, but the arts in public health research and think about our work in different ways? And next year, even thinking about the policy implications for this work. So how can this qualitative data, but also this community engaged data, be used to leverage local and state and broader policy change? Next year, EOYDC is going to embark on this and using really the book as a tool, the book as data, to access Oakland City Hall on a local level, but to create policy town halls and policy forums where the young leaders can begin forming their own policy agenda around some of the themes that came up in the book. So things around youth development, around violence, and around community coalitions. I would like to thank definitely the youth, staff, alumni, and board of EOYDC, my committee member and mentors, my funders, all the people that helped the book come into fruition. And our first book talks were at the Oakland Public Library and Marcus Bookstore, the oldest African-American bookstore in existence in the country. There's our contact information and the website for the book, and thank you so much for your patience.
Thank you. So quick question, clarification. How do people get a hold of the book and purchase it? Just on the website, or how do people do that?
You can do both, but I have about 20 here. It's $15, so I'll be happy to sell it to whomever might want to buy it.
Thank you.